Die Geldmeisterin. Der Finanzpodcast. Mit Julia Kistner.
Nachdem sich bei einer Null- bis Negativverzinsung solide Staatsanleihen nicht mehr dafür eignen, Risiko raus und Stabilität rein in sein Portfolio zu bringen, braucht es Alternativen zum zinslosen Risiko durch Anleihen. Eine sind Investitionen in Infrastrukturaktien, zumal gerade die USA, aber auch Europa billionenschwere Pandemie- und Konjunkturprogramme angekündigt haben. Gerade in den USA auch schon teilweise umgesetzt haben. So unterzeichnete Präsident Biden eine 597 Milliarden Dollar schwere Infrastrukturinitiative, wobei die Staatshilfen unter anderem in die Modernisierung von über 30.000 Kilometer an Autobahnen, Straßen und Hauptstraßen und die Reparatur von Brücken fließen, weshalb ich mir vor einem halben Jahr, als die Offensive schon verkündet wurde, Aktien des Baukonzerns hochtief ins Portfolio gelegt habe, da er sehr stark im amerikanischen Markt verhaftet ist. Zu früh, wie sich herausstellte. Irren ist menschlich, deshalb nochmals ist es ja so wichtig, an der Börse zu diversifizieren. Der Hochtiefkurs hat in den letzten 6 Monaten 10% federn gelassen. Ich nehme es gelassen und verkaufe trotzdem nicht. Hochtief ist jetzt, das ist nur meine ganz persönliche Meinung, mit einem für 2022 erwarteten Kursgewinnverhältnis von 8,6 wirklich sehr günstig bewertet. Nur noch Porsche-Vorzugsaktien sind günstiger. Zurück zum Thema Infrastruktur. Wobei bei der nachgefragten Infrastruktur heute natürlich ganz anderes wie in meinen bisherigen Vorstellungen hineinfällt. Investitionen in Medizintechnik, Cybersecurity, in 3G-Technologie, Robotics, Automatisation oder Elektromobilität meint Serit Osmani, Leiter für langfristige europäische und globale Aktienstrategien bei Martin Kury, eine Tochter von Franklin Templeton.
Well, we think infrastructure by its own structure and definition is a long-term investment opportunity. Many of those programs have been unveiled globally as a way to recover from the pandemic crisis. If you look at the fiscal stimuli that have been pledged, as of the end of last year, it was equivalent to over 15% of global GDP. And that figure has been rising here with additional stimuli programs and infrastructure programs being unveiled, like in the US in particular, quite sizable ones, which are continuing to add to that. When you think of the time it will take to channel this fiscal stimuli into the real economy is what will determine the shape of the economic recovery. Mm-hmm. We think some of those fiscal stimuli will go into infrastructure programs that will be over 8 years and beyond, multiple decade potentially infrastructure programs.
Serit Osmani hält es übrigens für ratsam, nicht direkt in die Endanbieter von Medizintechnik, E-Autos, Windräder und so weiter zu investieren, deren Margen aufgrund des starken Wettbewerbs stark unter Druck sind. Cleverer wäre, sich deren Zulieferanten genauer anzuschauen, also die Bauteilehersteller, die Hersteller von Mikrochips, Baumaschinenproduzenten, Windradmotoren, Softwarespezialisten und so weiter und so fort, die auch viel, viel mehr verschiedene Abnehmer haben. Sehr schön, nur ist es nicht schon zu spät, auf diesen Zug jetzt erst aufzuspringen?
Well, there's across the key regions globally, there are infrastructure programs that have been unveiled. In the US, they're just coming to having been approved by the Senate and therefore going ahead. In Europe, there are infrastructure programs that are put in place. And in Asia, specifically in China as well, they are also being channeled as a way to stimulate economies. So it's really globally rather than any specific region that we're looking at.
And if you think of infrastructure, you always think of old economy like construction workers, but that's not the infrastructure you mean, no? Where are you invested in which sectors?
Yeah, you're right. The way to think about infrastructure is a broader definition, and we're going to talk about a few aspects here. The first one is renewable energy, which governments are favoring as a way to decarbonize economies. And that's happening across the world, including China. The second one is electric transportation, I should say. And in electric transportation, there's two forms that are being favored by infrastructure programs. One is high-speed railways, and the other one is electric vehicles. And the electric vehicles you saw from the Biden infrastructure program, that's an important part of focus for the U.S. And that, again, is a form of green infrastructure. The third one is 5G telephony. This is something that was always going to be part of the upgrade of the telecoms infrastructure. But there is a bit of speed up in that upgrade as a way to increase productivity in economies throughout the globe. The fourth one is healthcare infrastructure. And it's important to highlight that as we come out of this pandemic crisis, it's going to be likely for some of the fiscal stimuli to be channeled in upgrading healthcare infrastructure throughout the world, both in order to make the healthcare ready, pandemic ready again, but therefore be physical upgrade infrastructure, but also increase digitalization of the healthcare system to improve productivity. Mm-hmm. So those are the more traditional four areas of infrastructure spending. But you could also then stretch that definition of infrastructure to cloud computing. During the pandemic crisis, more companies have migrated their operations and their activities online. Mm-hmm. As part of that, that has increased the cloud computing, which is a digital infrastructure in itself. And then you could even stretch into robotics and automation. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to that later on. But what we think with robotics and automation is this was a structural trend that was already in place that we believe has been accelerated since the pandemics and post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Reason being, companies have realized that they need to make their production lines more resilient and their supply chains more robust. Mm-hmm. In order to tackle some of these disruptions that the pandemic crisis has brought. And part of making those production lines more resilient and those supply chains more robust is about increasing investment in robotics and automation.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. So robotics, we have also the fantasy of deglobalization that everybody has to get back his production and therefore he has to reduce the cost of labor.
The reality is that some corporates will indeed be looking at that as a way to minimize the impact on their margin. Mm-hmm. And indeed, if there is a trend towards nearshoring or onshoring, bringing some of the production bases back closer to home countries, then there will be potentially also an acceleration in robotic and automation for the reasons you specified, Julia.
Wir halten fest, Infrastrukturinvestitionen muss man langfristig sehen. Es dauert mindestens 8 Jahre, bis Infrastrukturgelder voll abgefragt und auch in Bauprojekte umgesetzt werden. Und die Aufträge sind dann noch Arbeit für Dekaden. Es ist also nie zu spät für Infrastrukturinvestments. Fragt sich, welche Regionen und auch Sektoren da besonders interessant sind.
Yeah, it's a good question. So clearly, valuations for us as investors are an important focus that dictate how much we want to be exposed to one area or the other. Growth potential in all of those areas is another important aspect, and I'm going to come on to that later on. And then, of course, the returns potential as well that you generate from some of those infrastructure projects. What we find when we look at some of the pockets, take electric vehicle as one specific, we forecast 40% annualized increase per annum, so annualized 2030 in electric vehicles, which is a pretty attractive growth opportunity for investors. And if you think about it, Julia, not often in the history of investing are we faced with an opportunity to harness an opportunity like this one, which is really tackling an existing established market that mm-hmm. has taken over 100 years to establish itself, that has suddenly, and I say suddenly, but it's been gradual, but has been mandated by regulators to shift from combustion to electric. Mm-hmm. At the same time as desires and consumption demand has shifted. Mm-hmm. So as a result, we're not talking about a new market that needs to establish itself, that needs to prove itself. This is an established market that has been asked to shift to a different type of technology.
But so with new players.
Yeah, so that very strong growth is likely to come through. Mm-hmm. So that's one area that we think is very attractive. Mm-hmm. The other one, if you look at healthcare infrastructure, and you couple that with demographic changes related to aging population, and therefore increased level of diseases, 21st century diseases, as we call them, are cancer-related, diabetes and obesity, there is a big demand for infrastructure over multiple decades, sadly. Mm-hmm. And so that creates very strong drivers. If you then look into cloud computing, growth potential there remains very strong, obvious reasons that we mentioned. And robotics and automation, you still have many production lines that can benefit further from increased automation, increased usage of robotics. If we take the example of cobots, collaborative robots, we're looking at a potential growth of 30 to 40% in that sense. Robotics. So there's a lot of very strong growth potential. So really, almost to summarize the answer to your question, Julia, there are so many strong opportunities within infrastructure along the lines that we mentioned that it's very difficult to choose which one is more attractive than the other growth in terms of growth potential.
Infrastructure shares, are they very volatile, or does this also depend on the sector, or is it stability that you bring into a portfolio with infrastructure companies?
Rather than the stability, it's more about the opportunity to harness these attractive growth profiles with companies that generate strong returns. And that's, we tend to be more selective within the infrastructure ecosystem. We're looking for companies that are able to benefit from the growth profiles we're talking to you about, but that are able to generate high returns and are able to protect those returns from competitive pressures. So, Julia, if we take the example of electric vehicles, for us, the way to harness that opportunity of 40% annualized growth to 2030 is not by looking at the car at the forefront of the value chain, there where the consumer is. There is a lot of competition at that end. Consumers have a lot of choice of cars, and that competition is effectively leading to lower returns potential.
Wir halten fest, rund den Globus wird die nächsten Jahre viel, viel, viel in die zum Teil veraltete Infrastruktur gesteckt. Und man darf darunter auch nicht nur die Bauwirtschaft verstehen. Viele öffentliche Gelder werden künftig erstens in den Sektor erneuerbare Energie fließen, Stichwort Dekarbonisierung. Zur CO2-Reduktion sollte auch zweitens die Förderung elektrischer Mobilität beitragen. Darunter fallen auch nicht nur E-Autos, sondern auch Hochgeschwindigkeitszüge. Drittens geht es auch um Investitionen in 3G-Technik und die Telekommunikation zur Produktivitätssteigerung und viertens um die Medizintechnik, die gesamte Infrastruktur im Gesundheitssektor und deren Digitalisierung. Im weiteren Sinne zählt Cerit Osmani zur Infrastruktur noch Cloud Computing dazu, da Unternehmen und Regierungen ihre Aktivitäten verstärkt online verlagern. Daher auch ein verstärkter Fokus auf Cybersicherheit. Auch wird man verstärkt in Robotics und Automatisation investieren, um die Lieferkette stabiler machen zu können und auch zu verkürzen und um im eigenen Land wieder mehr Arbeitsplätze schaffen zu können. Und ein weiterer Bereich ist noch die Hygiene und alle Firmen, die dazu beitragen und deren Dienstleistungen und Produkte seit der Pandemie natürlich viel stärker nachgefragt sind. Cerit Osmani rechnet sich also viel Wachstumspotenzial bei der E-Mobilität mit einem jährlichen Wachstum von 40% aus. Dieser Megatrend hat den Vorteil, dass er auch auf eine viele Jahrzehnte alte Industrie fußt, die nicht erst erfunden werden muss, sondern nur durch Regulatorium vom Verbrennungsmotor in den alternativen Antrieb gepusht wird. Ein starker Treiber sei auch die alternde Bevölkerung natürlich und deren Bedürfnisse, speziell medizinische Infrastruktur in den Bereichen Diabetes, Demenz und Krebs. Weiters setzt er verstärkt auf Cloud Computing, Robotics und Automatisation, also einmal alles. Allerdings tummeln sich in den Bereichen schon sehr, sehr viele Unternehmen. Die Margen sind teilweise schon ganz schön unter Druck. Aber auch da hat Cerid einen spannenden Investmentansatz.
Further up the value chain, we find companies that are necessary, that produce goods or services that are necessary to the production of cars, that are actually operating in niche areas, which therefore gives them higher pricing power, have higher returns profile, and that sell their services or their products to all car manufacturers. Which means for us as investors, we don't have to make a view on which car manufacturer is going to sell more cars than another, going to grab more market share. We can really harness the overall market growth potential by being in companies that sell to all the car manufacturers. And we're talking here electronics companies, semiconductors, microchips, that are needed for the well-functioning of cars and that are an increasingly bigger component. If you look at the aggregate car market, car makers globally, they generate a return on invested capital of 6%. If you look at companies that operate in the electronics part of the component into a car, they generate returns in the 15 to 25%. And some companies even higher than that. So that's where we think there are more attractive opportunities.
In terms of risk, is there also the risk smaller than in the old economy because you have more different buyers of your components? Or?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. These are areas of the value chain that are more consolidated with their rational behaviors, less competitive pressures. And therefore, that all contributes to stronger pricing power. So de facto for us as investors, it means there's less risk.
Was lernen wir daraus? Ich schaue mich bei den Komponentenproduzenten um, nicht bei den Anbietern der Endprodukte von E-Autos, Diagnosegeräte, Windräder und so fort, sondern bei den Komponentenhersteller, also den Zulieferer für diese Anbieter. Sie arbeiten noch mit größeren Margen, sie haben verschiedene Abnehmer, das Risiko ist geringer. So, und jetzt wird's wirklich spannend. Where do I find these equities?
Well, in the there are companies in the semiconductors ecosystem. There's companies like ASML, for example. That's a kind of company that we like and that we think long-term has got very strong growth and returns potential. You have some of the leaders globally in the car are in Germany. Infineon technology, for example, is very well positioned to harness the opportunity in electric vehicles. But then you've got companies, if we're looking at the healthcare infrastructure, these companies that we find attractive are a mix of companies in Europe and in the US, and actually also some companies in Asia. And then if you look at the 5G, there are some good companies in Europe specifically. Finally, on the initiatives around construction, around greener, more efficient buildings, again, you can find some opportunities in Europe and equally you can find some good opportunities in the US. And the importance here is whilst these companies might be quoted in Europe or in the US, they operate globally. So the investors and exposure to the global cycle rather than just the regional cycle.
Die genannten Favoriten von Cerid findet ihr übrigens auch in den Shownotes dieser Folge. Darunter ist die niederländische ASML Holding NV, der weltweit größte Anbieter von Lithografiesystemen für die Halbleiterindustrie. Interessant sei auch Infineon, viele deutsche Zulieferer in der Autoindustrie, Medizintechnikunternehmen rund um den Globus, gute 3G-Technologiefirmen, die man vor allem in Europa findet, ebenso wie US- und europäische Top-Unternehmen, die sich mit Green Building beschäftigen. Das heißt, klassische Bauunternehmen befinden sich nicht mehr auf seiner Einkaufsliste?
We have Kingspan, for example, which is a leader in insulation panels, which is an important part of reducing the carbon footprint of building. Because making them more insulated does reduce the energy bill and therefore the carbon footprint. So that's one company that's directly related to construction. We have a exposure to companies that are selling into the construction market that are selling software. So companies like Nemetschek or Autodesk, the US equivalent. And these are companies that are well positioned to capture the construction potential. And then we've got industrial equipment that is needed to progress construction projects. So companies like Atlas Copco, which is a leader in compressor technology, is a company that is well positioned to capture that physical infrastructure. What's exciting about Atlas Copco is it's also a leader in vacuum technology, which is used in the semiconductor industry.
Because
semiconductor production lines have to happen in chambers that are free of any dust. Therefore, the vacuum technology that Atlas Copco provides is used in those companies.
But you didn't mention right now clean energy. What about that?
Yeah, clean energy is an important component of the infrastructure program. And we think here investors have to be careful because there are pockets of that ecosystem that are very competitive. For example, when you're looking at the competition for wind farms and both onshore and offshore wind farms, the price for competing for these designated areas has gone very, very high because there's a traditional new energy companies that are there, but there's also the incumbent energy companies that are wanting to diversify their business and to increase the exposure to new energy that are coming in and bidding. And so there's an element of risk of irrational bids that can lead to deteriorating returns. What we prefer is to be with companies that, again, facilitate the wind farms. So companies in the construction space, industrial equipment companies that you need to put in place these wind farms, or electronic components that go into wind farms, and we've talked about some of them, or indeed some of the software companies that are needed for industrial designs and for simulation of some of those wind farms to make sure that they are properly designed and properly resistant to various kind of extreme weathers. And these are companies like Dassault Systèmes or ANSYS in the US that give you some indirect exposure to the green energy.
So I think I got it right now. You invest in components because there the competition is not that high. And also you have to take your time for infrastructure. It's a buy and hold or a long-term strategy to invest.
Absolutely right. And so really to summarize our approach, we look at an ecosystem, an attractive opportunity, and try and find the most attractive way to be exposed to that opportunity with lower competition risk, lower disruption risk, and therefore stronger pricing power and higher return potential. And that's why we typically find that being in enablers of this infrastructure and components of this infrastructure is a better area to be.
Very interesting, very nice, and very new for me. Thank you very much, and thank you for your time, and good luck with your investments.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Also auch in der Baubranche setzt er mit dem US-Amerikaner Autodesk und dem Münchner Nemetschek auf Software-Spezialisten für Architekten und die Baubranche insgesamt, auf Anbieter weiter vorne in der Wertschöpfungskette. Dann setzt er noch auf Baumaschinenhersteller wie den schwedischen Atlas Copco, der mir zugegebenerweise auch sehr gut gefällt, zumal Druckluft überall gebraucht wird, zum Aufpumpen der Kutschenräder, Entstauben des Pferdestalls, des Pferdeanhängers, Späßle gemacht. Ich meine natürlich etwa die Schraubenkompressoren von Atlas Copco für die Schutzmaskenherstellung, Atlas Copco Kompressoren für die Staubfreiheit bei der Halbleiterproduktion, Druckluftrockner, Druckluftfilter, Kompressoren als mobile Energiespender und so weiter und so fort. Und natürlich kennt man Atlas Copco auch weiterhin auf dem Bau als klassischen Presslufthammer. Im Bereich der sauberen Energie, Windräder, sei der Wettbewerb einfach zu hoch. Hier nennt er vor allen Dingen Vorleistungen wie Industrial Design, die die Effizienz der Windräder steigern, wie der US-Hersteller von Simulationssoftware Ansys. Was mich diese Woche neben Infrastruktur noch viel beschäftigt hat? Der Börsenknaller für mich der Woche ist die Neuzusammensetzung des DAX. Ob das dem MDAX gut tut, dass seine 10 Schwergewichte, vor allem Airbus, in den DAX abwandern? Ich weiß es nicht. SDAX, MDAX, DAX, hin oder her, auf die Mitglieder der Indizes kommt es letztlich an. Und wer einmal alles möchte, kann ja auch noch mit einem ETF in den MSCI Germany investieren. Der Index bildet mit 62 Aktien aus allen DAX-Segmenten 85% des deutschen Aktienuniversums ab und bietet damit eine deutlich größere Streuung als der DAX. Über aktuelle Börsenaufreger und Ereignisse berichtet Werktag für Werktag übrigens die kleine Podcast-Schwester der Geldmeisterin, die Börsenminute. Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt, auf YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Xing und auch auf www.geldmeisterin.com. Eine erfolgreiche Anlagewoche wünscht euch die Geldmeisterin und Julia Kistner. Und am Schluss noch der Disclaimer. An dieser Stelle wie immer der wichtige Hinweis, dass die Inhalte dieses Podcasts, der Videos und der Webseite geldmeisterin.com ausschließlich der allgemeinen Information dienen und die ganz persönliche Meinung der Geldmeisterin und von Julia sind. Es handelt sich keinesfalls um Investmentempfehlungen, Rechts- oder Anlageberatungen. Das Gesagte, Geschriebene und Dargestellte kann und soll auch nicht das persönliche Gespräch mit deiner Finanzberaterin ersetzen. Auch sind weder die Geldmeisterin noch Julia Kistner informiert darüber, wie es mit deiner Vermögenssituation ausschaut, deinen Bedürfnissen, familiären Umständen, deinem Finanzwissen, die Risikoneigung oder deinen Anlagehorizont. Anlegen erfolgt daher auf eigene Gefahr. Die Geldmeisterin und Julia Kistner haften nicht für Anlageentscheidungen, die aufgrund ihrer Medienbeiträge getroffen werden. Kurzum, für die Geldmeisterin und Julia Kistner war es immer ein Vergnügen, dich bei deinem Vermögensaufbau zu inspirieren. Auf deinen eigenen, persönlich richtigen Geldesel musst du schon selbst setzen. Viel Erfolg!